Hello, and welcome to SpyCast, from the secret files of the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. I'm Dr. Vince Houghton, the museum's historian and curator. Every month, we bring you interesting talks with authors, scholars, and practitioners who live in the world of global espionage. Join us as we take a closer look at the secret world of intelligence.
Our guest today is Major General Oleg Kalugin, retired. General Kalugin was the youngest major general in the KGB during the Cold War. And as many of you know, he has been a member of our board since the beginning of the museum. One of his major duties when he was with the KGB was he was in charge of counterintelligence worldwide, which led to his traveling to a variety of countries. And we thought it would be interesting today to interview General Kalugin about what is going on in the Ukraine, Russian designs on the Ukraine, specifically on Crimea, and just to get his views on the situation, specifically on the sort of strategic aim of Russia, and also the intelligence perspective and what is happening. I am joined today by Dr. Vince Houghton, who has just joined us at the International Spy Museum. He is our new historian, and he will be, in fact, overseeing the podcast as we go down the track. He and I will alternate, and in some cases, perhaps we'll be together, as we are today, in interviewing someone. So I'm glad to introduce him to you. I'll go ahead and start off the questioning, and Vince, you join in whenever you are so moved. General Kalugin, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Okay. You're a familiar face. You're a familiar face from being here in the museum. Let me start out by asking you, where does Ukraine fit in with sort of the Russian strategic picture? Where, how does Russia see the Ukraine?
Well, the current events in Ukraine and Russian assessment of that situation, they are going back to the century-old relations. Well, Ukraine was part of the Russian Empire, and though there were some guys in Ukraine who preferred the Catholic Church, and in that sense, they were closer to Poland. The eastern part of Ukraine, was just part of the Russian, language, culture. And inevitably, once Ukraine became an independent state, so the problems between the two countries all of a sudden, are back. And since I watch Russian television every evening, they recall a guy, ultra-nationalist from Ukraine, Bandera, it's not probably a fact, but he is referred to as a former collaborator with the Nazi, Hitler regime. And so, in fact, some people who are interested may know, he was at some point poisoned in 59 and died. Well, who else? Well, we know from Russian recent history, there were people who were poisoned, but in the old days, they would simply shoot them and put the concentration camp. So, that's part of Russian history, and Ukraine is part of that history.
Does Crimea have a special significance, a special role in how Russia sees the world and sees Ukraine?
Well, Crimea has a special role because it was part of the Russian territory. After when the Tatar and Turkish, people just possessed that island. And it was the Crimean War of the 19th century between the Russian, armed forces and guys from, Turkey or Muslim, which led to Crimea, in the long run, become part of the Russian Empire. Ukrainians do not accept that idea. They say we have every reason to do our own job. And actually, until the resignation of I mean, President Yanukovych just a couple of months ago. Well, things did not seem that threatening, you know. Now with the Moscow sort of presence on the high level, not yet finished, of course, but it has become for Russia hard to conduct the old-style policies. The prospects of a war between Ukraine and Russia have become really strong.
You know, when you hear people speak about Ukraine, Crimea, and Russia, many people go back to when Khrushchev gave Crimea
exactly
back that, to the Ukraine. What is the significance of that? What was that
about? Khrushchev, as you know, lived a long life before becoming Russian, I mean Soviet Secretary General and leader. But he had some Ukrainian background, I believe. And Khrushchev, one of his really historic gestures, was a gift of the Crimea to the Ukrainian people. I mean, because Ukrainians were part of the USSR, I mean, Soviet Union. So it didn't really matter. But once Ukraine has chosen its own way, Crimea has popped up as just something threatening to Russian military, naval, facilities and general Russian possession of the island, which was a gift to Ukraine. Now give us the Yemen. So Russians are very unhappy about that.
But this was when there was a Soviet Union, it was already within that.
Oh, yeah, sure, that's true.
But that union, as it were,
with
so it wasn't
the collapse of the Soviet system, and I'm talking Soviet with Gorbachev, yeah. I mean Yeltsin rather. When the Russian Federation became an independent state, part of the former USSR, things have changed. And we now see the revival of nationalist emotions in Ukraine. And, that's really a deeply disturbing fact, because Ukrainians will not surrender. And if they are led by some figure, with even nationalist background, they will accept him. So there's a major brewing. Maybe, I hope it will not happen, but military involvement of the two countries. And of course, Russia has many ways to do the job. But Ukrainians, I say, ever since Bandera was part of Russian, resisting.
The Crimea itself is in the Black Sea. And can you talk briefly about the importance strategically of the Black Sea for Russia?
Well, the Black Sea, it's the Mediterranean, Well, Turkish, sort of may as part of NATO. But Turkey, as you know, these days are also, instability. But through Turkey, they go to the Mediterranean. And in the Mediterranean, we have our friends there. Well, close to the area, like, say, President Assad of Syria, for instance, some other guys. So the Mediterranean, that's the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
And, that's the world. And in that sense, I don't think the Russians are going to go that long way. Yeah. But technically, this is possible.
So what might be some of the signs that Russia is going to actually invade Ukraine? Like which can you tell people to look for in the news that might tip off the public?
I hope, but this is just hope, that Russia will not go that far. I mean, the Kremlin, because that would maybe the beginning of a major confrontation between the West and, the former Soviet Union. Well, the Cold War practically is over. Ideological struggle, has been essentially abandoned. But some, historic issues now pop up as major events. So I hope that the Russian leadership will provide some kind of a compromise, which would not appear as a defeat of the Russians, and yet, somehow respect the emotional, state of the Ukrainian people.
Would the invasion of Georgia in 2008 be a framework that you would expect to see again used?
Well, no, I would not compare for two reasons. Georgia, was part of the empire many Georgians were always friendly and sort of felt comfortable with Russia. And even today, when there is no Soviet Union, well, I go to the Georgian embassy once in a while, right here. Friends, you know, but they are friendly, good people. And I say Ukraine has a different history. And then the Catholic Church collaboration with Nazi Germany during World War II, that's what makes Ukraine a really difficult problem to tackle and resolve.
The as you know, there is a referendum scheduled for the for Crimea on Sunday,
16th, I believe, right?
Yeah, and we have also heard that the that Russia is sort of giving out passports rather liberally if someone has any trace back to Russia or even wants to be part of the Russian thing, they get a passport.
Right.
So it's sort of creating a sense that there'll be a majority, if you will, in Crimea of people sympathetic to Russia. So if that vote goes for Russia, what would you expect to happen?
Well, there are many ways to resolve problems. The least acceptable is a military solution, because that would lead to a major confrontation. And with Georgians, it was not the problem, but with the Ukrainian, particularly the western part of Ukraine, which, well, even in terms of their spiritual values, they belong to the more to the Catholic Church than to Russian Orthodox, you know, and that also makes a difference. Georgians, well, were sort of, you know, in that sense, faith, you know, and friendly despite all the political problems.
Yeah. Do you have any sense, because you, after all, you had worldwide responsibility for counterintelligence, but that gave you insight into various countries' intelligence services. How capable is the intelligence service of Ukraine?
Well, I'm not sure they have become something of... that's my view, a personal view, but I do not see any comparison with the old, I mean, Soviet and current Russian, when the KGB is running the country. That's what I have been saying. It's truly a unique situation. You heard that from me earlier. The Soviet society was built on three major pillars. I mean, the Communist Party, KGB, security and military-industrial complex. With the collapse of the USSR, things somewhat changed. And if we talk about three pillars, number one is KGB, number two is a Russian Orthodox Church run by the KGB, and Russian business, which accepts the rules. Otherwise, he will hang himself in the bathroom, like Berezovsky in London, or like Khodorkovsky now in Germany or Switzerland. I mean, a business who does not fit into the general structure. Doomed.
So, if God forbid a war starts, if Russia decides to invade Ukraine, what kind of actions would you expect Russian intelligence or even special operations like Spetsnaz to engage in to try to destabilize the Ukrainian regime?
I think the Spetsnaz services would play a crucial role before the war starts. That's their business, actually, either to defeat the enemy or avert a military conflict. And, the Russian intelligence service and, the current, Russian security and intelligence guys, they are moderates. They are not the old-style human Soviet, different. And they keep a low profile.
Except Putin himself.
Yeah. Right, that's what I was going to say. Except that president, for him, it's a matter of personal prestige, in a sense, the USSR fell apart, and now look, Crimea—that's part of Russian history. We fought the Turks, the Muslims. How come and the Sevastopol, major naval base for the Russian? No, that's for Russian. It's a matter of prestige. So, hopefully, Putin always looked for some kind of a compromise. In many different situations. Ukrainian-Russian potential confrontation would be suicidal for the both sides. That's my view.
Do you see Putin trying to reestablish? He's not trying to rebuild the Soviet Union, but because he's trying to reestablish the sphere of influence that Russia has. I mean, not over the Baltics, because they're as European as you can get, but over, like, you know, obviously Georgia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Moldova, some of the countries that were far more closely tied to the Soviet system. Do you see him trying to reestablish some control over those countries? Is Ukraine's situation an indication?
Well, I don't think they will go that far. I hope so. And there is opposition in Moscow, and actually a few public demonstrations. They were some hundreds or maybe a couple of thousand people in Moscow and even parts of Russian territory behind the Ural Mountains in the east, you know. So the people are alerted, and I hope so, and I say this is my view, that Putin will not go that far as to employ military force. Well, the special forces and special operations, that's a different story. You have to find evidence, you have to prove, but the military action, I hope, will not occur.
So if you were advising the American intelligence agencies right now and say, here's what you should look for to predict a week from now, 2 weeks from now, if an invasion is going to happen, if it's not going to happen, what are some of the indicators that you would look to or that you would tell them to pay attention to? I mean, for example, troop movements
chief of the State Department, right?
Oh, right, John Kerry.
Yeah, sure. Well, we met the first time some 30 years ago here in Washington. Well, he has, I hope, he has been talking to Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. And I think the United States, and there were some threats of economic
freezing assets.
Freezing assets, bank assets. And Ukraine may lose economically. I was really pleased in the sense that Secretary of State Kerry traveled to Ukraine and delivered, according to the Russian media, and I haven't seen it, a $1 million check to the, to people help the solve situation financially. Because the Russians, it's really a ridiculous story. Ukraine in the old Soviet and, days of the Russian Empire would provide food, people of professionals. Now that's really amazing. Ukrainians have no food stuff.
Right.
They are dependent on imports.
And Ukraine at one point was the breadbasket of Europe.
Exactly,
right?
Europe, the Russian and Soviets, and now it's really just historically, just a major disgrace. I mean, that's part of the post-World War II world, falling apart. But in this case, I say it's not, Baltic states easy to deal with, but resistance will be also tough. I know. And Russia had experience fighting a small country, like Finland.
Right.
They thought, the Finns, that's a former Russian Empire territory. But the Finns proved to be quite. And until the Russians found way to the hearts and minds of the Finnish leadership. I was involved in that process, so familiar with that.
Would you expect the same if of a Russian occupation of Ukraine, that there would be widespread insurgency against a Russian occupation, or the people themselves would rise up?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe that if Russians do something on the military side, invasion or whatever, with their special forces units, that may lead to real trouble, because the Ukrainians will not accept that. And I'm talking about the majority of the people, not all Ukrainians, some of them.
Because the war wouldn't last. The war between the Ukrainian military and the Russian military would be relatively short.
Yeah,
but occupation's absolutely. The United States learned in Iraq that occupation's a whole other story.
That's right. Yeah. By the way, appropriate. That was Putin's words. The downfall of the USSR was the greatest tragic geopolitical right. catastrophe.
Yeah. Catastrophe.
20th century.
Yeah.
That's correct. So, yeah.
You know, you have told me in the past, you knew Putin. He was a junior officer in the KGB when you were in the KGB.
That's correct. But
can you
honestly,
share any of your impressions of him with us?
What? No impressions at all. None. You know,
he was not a student of yours.
Yeah,
subordinate.
Well, in fact, as he was born in Leningrad, St. Petersburg, like myself, we actually were neighbors. Well, he's younger than me, but we just same couple of blocks away. Putin graduated from Leningrad University. He's a lawyer professionally, and he was picked up by a former mayor of St. Petersburg, a kind of a liberal Democrat, Sobchak, the guy who mysteriously died while in bed with some woman, allegedly, but no one knows the truth, what happened. Sobchak's daughter, though, Ksenia, she appears often on Russian television. I think that Putin tries to somehow, make the family at least less vulnerable. But, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century. These words should not be ignored. I say the Russians will try to use special forces and subversion, whatever. But I hope there will be no major military confrontation between the two countries.
But
Ukraine and Russia.
The forces that are in Crimea now.
Yeah.
These are military, very organized, they're very disciplined. Sure. They have no patches, no insignia.
No, absolutely.
But those are Russian forces, or are they some sort of militia? What do you think?
Well, Russia is a multinational, multi-ethnic, so there may be Russians, Ukrainians, Georgians, and Tatars, you name it, you know. I do not know the composition of the, but they were selected, they were just sort of, checked their backgrounds and we'll see if they manage.
Yeah, they're very organized and very disciplined. They're very careful not to comment to the media. They don't antagonize the media. They've now sealed off the border with Ukraine proper. This whole series of steps, both moving those forces in there. We understand that some communications have been cut off out of Crimea. In other words, and you recall when Russia went into Georgia, there was some cyber
warfare
type
tactics. Right. Yes, absolutely.
And it looks like the same is being employed in the standoff over Crimea.
Well, right, but this is better than using force and military power. Rather find some subtle things. With the current intelligence, capabilities, picking up the phone, that from American experience. So that's what Russians have been doing for decades.
But in
that sense, I think they're fully aware of what's happening, and they are not ready to attack, because that may really plunge the whole part of Europe, and maybe Europe as well, because the British and French, leaders, prime ministers, they came out with, under the United States, though quiet relatively, not as vigorous as the European nations, but that will be a major confrontation.
But I think you're right, and this is very quiet. It's sort of an intelligence, using intelligence, covert forces, and so forth. But the effect of this will be
to grab
Crimea.
That's correct. Yeah. But as I say, that kind of a gift of this former USSR to the Ukrainian people remains a valid argument for many Russians today. They say, look, come on, this is our Russian territory. We're talking about the last century or two. What the hell? How could they claim that's Russian? And it was a gift to Ukraine because we were part of the mighty you know, USSR. Yeah. So you should, well, appreciate that and not get involved in military provocation.
You make the Russian case very well.
Okay.
Speaking of
well, I watch it every yeah. evening at the Russian television channels from Moscow.
I think your insights have been valuable. We're delighted you came in today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We will bring you in again, and it may be about the Ukraine, and Ukraine again. Well. And let me welcome you again, Vince, to the podcast team. So I look forward to doing more interviews with you. Thank you both again.
We look forward to continuing this dialogue with you. And we'd like to know if you have any comments or questions on today's SpyCast. You can get in touch with us through email at spycast@spymuseum.org. Thank you, and we will see you next month.